Over these few weeks together, we're looking at a short series entitled New Testament Considerations. And last week we looked at the invitation in Hebrews 12:3, where the writer invited us to consider Jesus. There are a number of these invitations. We are not going to be able to look at them all, but the second in this little short series is the invitation we find here to consider the tongue, to consider the devastation that the tongue can cause. I suppose if you were to be asked what is the most dangerous part of the human body, you most certainly wouldn't put the tongue at the top. It's probably the fist, it's probably the legs, the feet. There is some part of the body you're quite well aware can do somebody a good bit of damage, and you might put that very much at the top. But the writer here, in inviting us to consider the devastation the tongue can bring, invites us to take seriously the need for its control. The tongue, says James in chapter 3, 5, is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is a fire. I suppose many of us have been somewhat shocked and horrified as we have watched the news in not just recently, but last year. Those devastating fires in Australia, do you remember seeing them? And in America, and particularly I think in Florida at the present time, they're fighting those forest fires. Started often by a careless discarding of a cigarette end, or embers of a barbecue that was enjoyed in a rather beautiful spot, and the embers were thought to be out, and the breeze blew the ashes away, and there was a little ember that was fanned into life, and it caught and spread, and the wind fanned the flames until acres upon acres are being devastated by these fires. Terrible, terrible consequences from a small beginning. You find it as it ravages the countryside, respecter of nothing in its wake. Cars, lorries, factories and homes, whole towns swept in and devastated, and the pictures of those burnt stumps sticking out of the ground, that's all that's left. And the writer here, James, says, you know, the tongue's like that. The tongue can devastate like that. Let's just remind ourselves of the kind of devastation internationally on a personal level and in a locality that can be caused by the tongue. Let's just remind ourselves, on an international scale, how many of the conflicts around the world have grown out of heated exchanges, out of words, out of rhetoric that have spilled over into action. And wars have been a consequence, and the devastation, the cruelty of that. How about in personal lives? Just the things people can say and accuse someone of, sometimes willfully wrongly, can lead to that person's whole life being devastated, and they as an individual deeply devastated by having to cope with what has been said. Cliff Richards has only just had his name cleared, and we've seen a number of celebrities and others put in that position in recent times. Whole societies have had sad things happen on their streets. We had the echo of the murder of the young man Lawrence from words expressing hatred for particular racial groups. And interracial violence often is fanned by words that spill over into those violent actions against religious groups. Our past Baptists and others have been on the receiving end. We hope and pray that may never happen again, but when it does, it's a devastating experience. The tongue is like a fire, and it can devastate a nation internationally, lives, whole neighbourhoods. And the tongue, says James, is like that. It's a fire. And it may be because of what James says in this passage and some of the words of Jesus about restraining the tongue that gave rise many centuries ago to monastic orders that were known as silent orders. They took very seriously that perfection lay in the direction of being able to curb the tongue. And the way in which they curbed that tongue was by living a life together in which very few words were spoken. They worked in silence. They ate in silence. And they lived with a vow of silence. Try to pick up, maybe in an extreme way, what the scriptures said. There's an amusing story told, I don't know whether you ever heard it, of a young woman who joined one of these orders, and they only were able to speak to the Reverend Mother once every 5 years. And after she had served her first 5 years, the interview came and the Reverend Mother said, "Speak your mind, my child." And she said, "Well, Reverend Mother, my room is very cold during the winter and my bed is very hard, and I just wondered if something might be done about it. Is that it, my child?" And she said, "Yes." Well, nothing happened, and 5 years later she came to the same gracious point of being able to speak to the Reverend Mother, and she made exactly the same complaint. Well, another 5 years went by, 15 in all now she'd been in this particular order, and the Reverend Mother asked her to speak her mind, and she said, "Reverend Mother, I know I've mentioned this before, and I'm sure you are rather busy, but my room is very cold in winter, and my bed is very uncomfortable." And the Reverend Mother looked at her and she said, "How long have you been here?" 15 years, Reverend Mother." "Are you happy here?" "Well, other than that, yes, Reverend Mother." She said, "I think not." She said, "You've done nothing but complain ever since you came here." But James gives us, in this passage, some little warnings. There are four warnings we might be able to pick up on and go home and reflect about. James, in the first instance in this section of scripture, says, "Beware, we can all speak out of turn." We can all speak out of turn. Now, he's not making an excuse when he says we all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man. He's not making an excuse. He's being both honest and suggesting that we might actually take seriously the need to think about what we say. Someone once put it like this: the tongue, being in a wet place, is liable to slip. How true that is. And James may be in a completely different way, is expressing a similar sentiment. If the tongue is in a wet place, James is saying, be careful how you tread. Just be a little careful how you tread. Some folk grow in confidence, and that confidence comes out in what they're prepared to say. I've heard that said about old people. Have you noticed that? Don't care. They've got older, and they can say what they like. How often there are folk who grow in confidence, and they feel that gives them the license to say things quite bluntly, quite directly, quite vividly. And maybe if eyebrows raise and they see them, they will say, well, I'm only stating the obvious. It's what everybody else is saying. I'm only saying it as it is another way in which it's put. And what about that regularising phrase, calling a spade a spade? Often, folk hide behind those comments, and that latter one particularly, as a way of justifying what they're saying and speaking somewhat forcefully. Beware, says James. We can all speak out of turn. And the one thing I've found as a pastor is this. Whenever someone speaks plainly about the plain speaker, the plain speaker don't like it. It's all right to speak about other people, but when it's returned, that's a different kettle of fish. Beware, says James, it's very easy to speak out of turn. The tongue being in a wet place can often slip. Just tread carefully. Beware. Second is this, beware. The tongue can undermine Christian testimony. The tongue can undermine Christian testimony. The tongue, says James, is a world of evil among its parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person. Now, I think it's very unusual when a person becomes a Christian that their conversation doesn't change. One of the things that happened to me when I became a Christian was the swear words that peppered my conversation were challenged and they dropped out. And the dirty jokes that were quite rude and crude and whatever were challenged. And whether we should say this or say that was challenged. That can be a consequence of becoming a Christian. But quite often we fail to see how the things we say can indeed undermine our testimony when we've got nothing to say good about anybody. Do you know Christians like that at work? They're always grumbling and complaining about the line manager, the boss, the union, this and that. Always their conversation is negative. It undermines Christian testimony. Have you ever come across Christians who've got some beef about an individual? And whatever they do, whether it's at work, at home, in the family, in the church, whatever they do, it's wrong. And there's an embitterment about it that seems to just undermine. Parents that have never an affirming thing to say about a child, to praise it, to encourage it. It's always don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. What you've done now, you're a pain, you're a nuisance. All the things that come out when we're frustrated, how often it undermines the Christian testimony when it's always that way. Oh, James says, beware, the tongue is a world of evil. Thirdly, James says, beware, poisonous words can poison people. Did you pick up on that? The tongue is a restless evil full of deadly poison. Full of deadly poison. Poison can make people ill and can take their lives, put their lives in jeopardy. Did any of you pick up on the young lady tennis player who was taken ill at Wimbledon? And it's now a matter of police investigation as to whether some kind of poison was involved, for whatever reason. Poison can make people ill, can put their lives in jeopardy, and can kill. And words, says James, can be poisonous. Poisonous. What was it that caused the death of Jesus? Poisonous words, testimonies that were false, accusations that were unsubstantiated. And on the basis of those, he was crucified. What a poignant reminder in what we do this morning. And in our modern world, how this has bounced into our modern lives with the computer and Facebook and Twitter, and what people feel sitting behind the keyboard they can say about other people. Politicians, celebrities, folk who they are supposed to be friends with. And the words sting for some people. And they can poison their mind about themselves. And they can become the kind of words that put their lives in jeopardy. For there are many people who have been so poisoned by words, they've taken their own life. Words can kill. Words can devastate a person. Young people who were bullied at school, how many of them take their lives? One of the most prevalent things is suicide in young people. Only down at the Sixth Form College as an invigilator this year, yet another young person committed suicide. One wonders, when these youngsters are vulnerable and possibly a little bit depressed, how those words play into their actions. But how often as a minister have I witnessed this? I would like to tell you in love what I think about you. I'm only doing it in love. How many ministers like myself about other people have received anonymous letters? Arrive on one's doorstep. Words can be devastating. Lastly, words can show the state of your own heart more than you think. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Asked James. Brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Maybe the words of his brother, James, the brother of the Lord, maybe those words of Jesus were at the back of what he was saying when Jesus said, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. A modern translation puts it like this: the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. If you want to check the spiritual state of your heart, listen to yourself. If you want to check just what kind of state that heart of yours is, listen to the negativity. And that's been a challenge to me, because as you get old, you love a good moan. And somebody has a moan, and you're there with your boots blacked. And you think, yeah. And we're all talking about what it was like 60 years ago. And that it ain't like it now. It's very easy for us not to see our Christian faith challenging our conversation. You slip into it. Listen to yourself. Listen to what you say about others. Listen to what you say at work. The state of your heart can be writ large, for it's out of the overflow of the heart your conversation comes. What kind of conversation is it? So there we have it. Consider the devastation the tongue can cause. Consider it. We've seen internationally in people's lives and in societies what it can do. It is indeed something worth thinking about. Beware, says James. We can all speak out of term, and the turn, and the tongue being a wet place, you need to tread carefully. Think about it. Beware, the tongue can undermine your Christian testimony. Beware. Words can be poisonous. They can make people ill. They can even lead to their demise. Words can also show the state of your heart. So the psalmist wrote, "Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips." Maybe a prayer we could make our own for a while as we reflect maybe this week. Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus and he said, "Don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful and for building others up according to their needs, that it may be beneficial to those who listen." And to the church at Colossae, Paul said, "Let your conversation be always full of grace." Grace, undeserved generosity in your speech. Let it be seasoned with salt. Consider the tongue. Let's just pray.